From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. In the spirit of Memorial Day, we meet writer, educator, and Marine veteran Dario DiBattista, who shares his thoughts about military service and his experience writing and teaching writing to war veterans as a form of post-trauma therapy at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. Then we visit Freedom Hill's therapeutic writing program in Cecil County and participant Don Koss, a Vietnam vet, to learn how just being near horses can have a calming effect.
They're prey animals, so they're very sensitive to distress. So if you want to interact with them, you have to center yourself and relax so that they're more comfortable, like that.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Monday is Memorial Day, a national day of remembrance of those who sacrificed their lives for the security of our country. Its roots are in the Civil War. It was originally called Decoration Day, when the graves of Union war dead were adorned with flowers. Though the holiday has transformed itself for many into a weekend of barbecues and beach visits, its significance is still consecrated by military parades and cemetery ceremonies and by loved ones' memories of those who have fallen in combat. Last Memorial Day, we invited writer, educator, and Marine veteran Dario DiBattista to share thoughts about military service and his experience writing and teaching writing to war veterans as a form of post-trauma therapy at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. We started by asking about his own background in the military.
I enlisted in the Marines in 2001, graduated boot camp August 24, 2001. There was a important historical event that happened shortly thereafter. And after that, I deployed for Iraqi Freedom in 2003 and 2004.
Have you always been a writer?
I've always been a creative type. I guess when I was younger, maybe I would write like song lyrics, but not very seriously. Interestingly enough, when you're overseas, there's a lot of downtime generally. You know, I know civilians tend to think of it as constant combat, running for your life, shooting everything, but in between missions, there's really not that much going on. So I started reading, and that's where I kind of rediscovered my love for literature. And for me, I used writing as a way of kind of making sense of stuff when I came home.
And so when you came home, you felt you needed to get a degree. Was that about writing?
For a while. Again, I got out. I finished my second deployment in 2004. I was in the reserves, which is this weird bipolar nature. You go from places like Fallujah to being a waiter at Chili's, and it's just bizarre. And I knew we'd be deploying again. My job was nation building, obviously very important in post-war Iraq and Afghanistan. So I didn't go to college until a couple years later when I finally got out of the Marines in 2007. I picked a random college in Connecticut because Connecticut offered free tuition to anybody who served in a combat zone. The first school I saw was Central Connecticut State University, and they had a Marine Corps memorial, a smaller version of the Iwo Jima monument. And I was like, okay, this is good enough.
The New York Times profiled you in 2008 and picked up on what you just mentioned, that you use writing to make sense of things. Did writing help you when you were returning from military service?
Sure, absolutely. I tell the service members I work with at the art therapy program at Walter Reed that I work at, you know, I give my little spiel about me. You know, yeah, I was in the Marines as well. You know, I was overseas. Early on in the war, there was not a lot of conversation about mental health issues. And this might seem hard to believe, but I didn't know why I was uncomfortable in crowds. I didn't know why I was getting angry all the time. You know, getting in fights with my coworkers, couldn't sleep, you know, self-medicating before I knew that was a term. So, you know, I started a blog. That was like kind of the glory days of blog. You know, people might laugh, but MySpace like changed my life. I had a platform where I could put my thoughts out there, and you know, I never really pushed it, but people would come back to me and they'd say, "Hey, man, that's really interesting what you're saying. You know, keep writing. I find what you're talking about very illuminating," and that encouragement kept me going, and it also helped me stick with it and you know reflect on stuff. When you're doing writing about yourself, memoir writing, you're writing about a past version of you as a hopefully more evolved or changed version of yourself. So it forces you to reflect on your experiences, and that was really good for me.
Would you read one of your poems for us?
Sure, absolutely.
It's called My Rifle.
614-8572. Can you tell me what you've seen? Who made you? Did delicate hands manage the machines that manufactured your murderous life? Did you jam in Kandahar, Mogadishu, Port-au-Prince, or Kafji? Will you jam here in Huseiba? Did a new soldier carrying you freeze at the moment of murder in Granada, his final breath a reminder of why he should have trusted you more? Do you carry sand and dirt from dozens of nations lodged in your private parts? Has your black skin been caressed and charmed by hands of brown, white, tan, blood, or oil? What is the history of your killing time? Who prevailed and who perished with you solidly in their hands? I love you, Rifle, but I will not take you home to Mom. When I get back, I'll put you away. I remember your every millimeter, but never want to touch you again.
Thank you. Tell me more about what you do at Walter Reed.
So I work part-time at an art therapy program for service members with post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury. It's a four-week intensive outpatient program. But the core of it all is art therapy, where they're asked to make these masks to represent their feelings about their service.
How does writing fit into this?
So again, the program is tailored to them. They have opportunities to do lots of alternative treatments. Obviously, the art therapy, music therapy, dance, acupuncture. They do what's called expressive writing, which is very intently writing about important stuff. It's based on the Pennebaker model. Write for 10 or 15 minutes about something of consequence. And then we come in the following week and do creative writing as a arts engagement activity. If this writing is working for you, here's other ways of doing it. Here's other ways of thinking about it. I go and I tell them about my service and how writing helped me when I came home.
What would you say you've gotten out of this activity at Walter Reed?
Oh, it's been amazingly transformative for my life.
Just how?
To just be connected. You know, the Marine Corps does not need fat 32-year-old Corporal Dario anymore. But I still get to serve. I get to work with guys who are in the fight. They're serving our country still bravely and proudly. And they don't necessarily buy in right away to this alternative therapy, but it's truly patient-centered care, and they're willing to do whatever they need to be able to get right so they can keep serving.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Memorial Day is Monday, so we're revisiting our conversation with Dario DiBattista, Iraq and Afghanistan war veteran, writer, and educator. You edited an anthology of stories written by veterans and civilians about Iraq and Afghanistan called Retire the Colors, published last fall. Why was it important to you to put those stories in print?
Sure. A lot of this goes back to my experiences at the military hospital, Walter Reed, and the art therapy program. I noticed a crazy universality between the experiences of everybody who was coming through, whether they were a sailor, airman, male, female, combat arms, support role. There's a lot of really unique considerations for the current wars. Obviously, they've been going on longer than any other wars in American history. There's a great disconnect between the American people and the military. Less than 1% of Americans have served in Iraq or Afghanistan. And that number gets really smaller when you think about the combat veterans, the guys who are what we think of when we see movies. And I noticed that it affects their families. It affects communities. We tend to simplify the argument or the way we think about it. Somebody goes to war and they have PTSD, and I don't totally know what that means, but I know they're edgy and they might get mad. You know, and we're sympathetic to that. We want to help that. But the issues that people face are much more complex. And the way it impacts them also impacts families, communities. It's much bigger than that group of people who we tend to not think about in any sort of rigorously intellectual way.
So how can Retire the Colors address that?
Sure. Lots of outstanding essays in there. We have infantry people, guys who did EOD, spouses. There's a really poignant essay by a woman who was in a relationship with somebody who was overseas. And she was so moved by reading a book about her boyfriend's unit that she got a tattoo to commemorate one of the guys she was reading about. Mark Solheim writes an essay about a young man he helped raise, his son's best friend who was killed overseas. The cultural attaché of Iraq, Dr. Tahani Al-Sadduq, she writes a Iraqi perspective. You know, it'd be myopic to only consider American perspectives about, you know, wars going on overseas in different places. Spouses, Eva K. L. Mahler writes about, even though she's a pacifist, you know, she goes to the gun range with her Marine gunnery sergeant husband. And there's a lot of really unique, really personal narratives in there that I think taken together can help reveal the entire breadth of the experience.
You were able to reach millions of people with an incredibly short story, an Instagram photo of you in full military garb standing next to a small Iraqi girl with the caption, "No longer welcome in my country, so why was I sent to hers?" One photo, just 13 words, went viral.
Yeah.
What was the context for it? And tell us what kind of reaction you got.
It's funny. I don't think of myself as a particularly political person. I personally don't get too caught up in red team versus blue team sort of arguments. But I think I was just making a very human and also military observation. It seems asinine to me that we would, and disrespectful, that we would lose thousands of our best young men and women in a place like Iraq, offering them freedom, to then to say, we're not going to give you that opportunity if you're still looking for freedom with us.
You posted this in January.
Mm-hmm.
After President Trump had put out the first travel ban?
Sure, yeah.
And what kind of reaction, what kind of feedback?
Mostly overwhelming support. It was a pretty wild experience. So many people were following the thread that I was able to just kind of make a point and then let other people argue for me. Really, honestly, my first experience with Twitter, I never really used it much before that. I was surprised by the vitriol in the community. Somebody said it would have been better if I came back in a coffin. People were challenging my service. Even after I took a screenshot that proved my records with the military. And there was a lot of hatred. People have really strong opinions about that. And I'm sympathetic to both sides. But to me, it's not a democratic or liberal observation to say we went over there. The impact of our geopolitical decisions has changed the region in a negative way. And it'd be like me going to your house and destroying it and not giving you any option to go somewhere else.
You mentioned a minute ago the disconnect between most Americans and those who serve. And that you just talked now about the sort of real hostility to criticism of a move by the new administration that's related to foreign policy. Do you see any connection there between the disconnect and the anger?
Sure, absolutely. I see this on some other pages I follow about current events. Somebody's talking about, we're going to send 3,000 more Marines to Afghanistan. And it's like, yeah, let's get them, let's go. Me as, you know, a student of history, somebody who went on to research these things more, learn about the history of the region, you know, study that, and just observing 16 years of warfare, it doesn't make sense to me why we would continue sending young men and women into harm's way for nebulous reasons that aren't of any sort of real consequence to us. You know, I can't say that with a ton of confidence. You know, I only speak as a former non-commissioned officer. You know, I have a small experience in a very large war, but I can't fathom it. And when war is a video game, war is a movie, war is entertainment, it's very easy for us to disregard the very real human cost of that. If you come to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center and see men missing legs, plural, legs and arms, plural, there's no way you couldn't be shaped by that. There's no way you would not be more judicious about what the sacrifice of these guys mean and why we're using them and why after 15 years we were politically tuned out to this. 16 years. You know, we're talking about Memorial Day, and this weekend we're going to say, you know, thank you to the troops, thank you for their service, thank you for the sacrifice. I paid very closely to this last election season. One candidate said they were going to ramp up operations overseas, and the other was okay with the status quo. And nobody took them to task on that. Why doesn't that matter?
Do you see any way of bringing these different attitudes more in line, more of an engagement? Do you see it happening?
I tried to. Obviously, that was part of the book. It's veterans and civilians. I wanted to, again, connect what's going on. The other point here that I think gets lost is war is a democratic process. The military does not choose to do it. The people we elect are the ones who make that decision for us. You know, you can say President Trump is not your president, but the Iraq and Afghanistan wars are your wars. That is fact. So I would want people to understand more about what's going on. You know, everybody advocates. We hold our hands over our hearts. We say, this land is your land, and we get a patriotic fervor. And that's great. I'm glad people care, but it just seems very superficial for me, to me, in a lot of cases. If I care about global warming, for instance, I know about CO2 emissions. I know about the melting ice caps. Most Americans could not name a city in Afghanistan. They couldn't talk about an operation ongoing. And they don't know what traumatic brain injury means. If I say TBI and you don't know what that means, that's the signature wound of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. I'm dubious about your support.
What are you working on now?
Working on a screenplay right now, and this dovetails very nicely into the issue. I do think and I do understand that the military experience is such a massive and powerful and painful one and hard to access. I think some people think it is if you haven't lived it or you don't know anybody who's served. So I'm working on a screenplay. I think the visual format is more digestible, and I'm hoping that it's a co-written screenplay with my friend Jeremy Schiller. We're trying to make it a comedy.
Tell me a little bit more about it. What does it cover?
So it's a story about a Marine after surviving combat in Iraq. He flies out his childhood best friend to road trip with him across America to deliver the death letter of a brother-in-arms who didn't make it back. The backdrop of this is the 2008 presidential election, and they're kind of the original gangster millennials, before millennials a term. You know, this guy just got back from combat, two tours, but he's still only 22. So he wants to drink, he wants to party, he wants to road trip across there. And his best friend is kind of a progressive type, for lack of a better expression. Like, he's really down to earth, but he still wants to drink and hook up with girls. And I think the juxtaposition between those two characters can help people access and empathize more with the main character and his wartime experiences that are affecting him.
Do you have a working title?
Flashback.
Flashback. I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Sure, of course.
That's Iraq and Afghanistan veteran Dario DiBattista talking about his military experiences. We spoke with him last year. You can find links to his work at his website, and we will have a link to that at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. Monday is Memorial Day, a time to remember those who gave their lives in sacrifice. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Time now for a quick break, and then we visit a veteran who finds solace working with horses in a therapeutic riding program. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. In the spirit of Memorial Day coming up on Monday, we're talking with people who served in the military. Earlier, we spoke with Dario DiBattista, who served as a Marine in Iraq and Afghanistan, about his military experiences and riding projects. Now we're visiting Freedom Hills Therapeutic Riding Program in Cecil County. There, Executive Director Renee Dixon and her staff offer equine-facilitated therapy to people who have disabilities. Last fall, On the Record producer Melissa Gear met Don Koss there. He's a Vietnam veteran who's a volunteer and participant in the program.
Can I talk to you while you're doing this? Is that too distracting? Okay, great. Can you tell me your name and tell me who you are and how you ended up coming here and all that?
My name is Don Koss. I'm from Chesapeake City, Maryland. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I was there in 69 with the 1st Infantry Division. I heard about this program through the Veterans Center in Cecil County. And my father used to be in the horse cavalry. Okay, so for me, this is,
wow.
It's for me, it's like going back 60 years. When I first walked in here and smelled the horses, I was transported like 60 years to when I was a little kid. And I like what they do here, working with various people with disabilities, trauma, whatever. And it's a good thing. So I'm more than happy to volunteer.
What do you do as a volunteer?
Whatever they say. Feeding, watering, shoveling, sweeping, and taking the horses in and out of the field, tacking them up, and whatever else they kind of need.
Now, what is this horse's name?
This horse is Maggie. Her name is Maggie.
And Maggie's your friend?
They're all my friends. I enjoy animals, and what I like about the horses is that you have to be in a safe place so that they're comfortable with you.
What do you mean by you have to be in a safe place?
Well, they're prey animals and herd animals, so they're very sensitive to distress. Okay, so if you want to interact with them, you have to center yourself and relax so that they're more comfortable, like that. What I like, this is a place of healing, and they have people that have had various types of stress or trauma in their life, and this is a way of working with that trauma, because you have to center yourself and be okay to be with the horses.
It's very intriguing what you said about when you walked into the barn and you were kind of transported 60 years.
Right.
What else do you get out of being around the horses?
Well, what I see is the people that are horse people are a certain type. And they're calm and they're compassionate for the animals and other people. And I like the energy that they have. Okay. And I see the other people that work here, and they're certain type of people, and it's attractive. I mean, if they weren't those kind of people, they wouldn't work here. You know,
because the horse needs that, or?
Yes. And you have to be a certain type. Well, look at this. This is a 1,500-pound animal, and we're fine with it. How cool is that?
Do you also ride?
I've started riding. I've started taking riding lessons because if I'm going to work with the horses, I should be able to do that.
How is that feeling?
I'm becoming more comfortable. Okay, I haven't ridden like in 60 years, okay? And I get on the horse, and at first it was totally like, okay, this isn't right, especially with the English saddle. I was looking for a saddle horn or a seat belt. I really needed a seat belt. But as I've done it, I've become more comfortable with the animal, more comfortable with myself, so. It's a blessing.
A couple of the people that I was talking to earlier, were talking about a program called the Equus Effect. Are you?
Yes.
Did you go through that?
Yes. I did go through the Equus program. And that's how I got involved in this. The Equus program helps people that have had trauma or some kind of disability. it's another aspect of their healing. So that's why I got involved in it.
You seem like you're kind of glowing right now. I have to say, this I think you've found your thing here.
I'm comfortable here. I'm comfortable here. It doesn't matter what they have me do, but it's like I feel almost like at home. It's like that connection. So
that's beautiful.
I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate.
Vietnam veteran Don Koss is a volunteer and participant at the Freedom Hills Therapeutic Riding Program in Cecil County. We have a link to information about the program at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow. Monday is Memorial Day. Blessings to those who have lost loved ones to military sacrifice.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks!